You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We just heard from Sacramento City Unified about the preventative measure the district is taking to help or even save children from drug overdoses by stocking Narcan on all campuses. But aside from prevention on the back end, there is concern about the lack of education about the dangers of fentanyl and other dangerous substances. Some districts do it well, others don't. According to reporting by our next guest, only two-thirds of California middle and high schools teach health education, and many times the classes are optional. And here's why this is important. Last year, almost 800 Californians under the age of 24 died of fentanyl overdoses. That's more than 20 times the number of deaths in 2016. Also last year, fentanyl is blamed for more than 80% of all drug-related deaths among California's young people. Carolyn Jones is a senior reporter at EdSource and joins us from Oakland. Carolyn, thanks for being here.
Sure, happy to be here.
So we just heard from Sac City Unified about them and as well as other districts stocking naloxone, Narcan. In your research, have you found that this is commonplace in other areas across California?
Well, it's more and more so. I mean, since we've seen this surge, particularly this fall, more districts, including Los Angeles Unified, have started doing that and also really taking a close look at how they're educating kids about the subject.
You know, the numbers are just staggering, you know, from year to year. When we're talking about the fentanyl use in California, what exactly is going on? How prevalent has this become in schools or impacting specifically young people and teens and children?
Well, as you said, I mean, the numbers are just really staggering. Last year, you know, close to 800 people in California under age 24 died of fentanyl overdoses. And just to put it in context, this is at the same time that drug and alcohol use overall is going down among young people in California. So there's just been this huge uptick that can really be pinpointed on the prevalence of fentanyl, with really tragic results.
Yeah. And the concern here in your reporting really is the lack of education. In the beginning of this conversation, we mentioned many schools do not offer health education courses in middle and high school. That's mandatory. So let's just dive into that. What did you find?
Well, it was really interesting. It varies really from district to district, even from school to school, from class to class even. I was really surprised to learn that California has this wonderful K through 12 health curriculum, health standards, that's very detailed and thought out, and health educators worked on it for years, and it's been adopted and so forth, but it's not mandatory. So some districts do a great job teaching this, and other districts don't for various reasons. I mean, one is which, you know, when kids get into high school, there's so many college prep classes they have to take, you know, to get into UC or CSU. And so sometimes there's just not room in the schedule to have one more required course. You know, is it going to be that fourth year of Spanish or is it going to be a health class? So some schools might offer health, but it's just an elective. I found very few that require it.
Hmm. So is it also, where do mandates and policy fit in, or does funding also fit into the fact that it's optional? It's not mandatory, even though it's a wonderful program rolled out throughout the state.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to hire a health teacher, obviously, so that would cost money. A lot of districts instead will contract with a local organization to come in and teach a unit, maybe in a biology class or an English class or even a PE class on health or, you know, drug education, tobacco education, alcohol, and so forth. But very few offer a dedicated class. And what you get in a dedicated health class is that, you know, you get other benefits too, you know, nutrition, exercise, mental health, certainly, you know, how to form positive relationships and how these things all sort of interweave together and also tie into the curriculum as well.
Mm. Given that some districts invest in it, others don't prioritize it for a variety of reasons. When focusing on kind of like the gold standard districts that are investing in this type of health education, how are they making that possible?
Well, it's been a decision that districts have made, you know, probably from the school board on down, to really prioritize student health. And sometimes it's in response to a real community crisis with drugs and alcohol. I talked to some people down in Redondo Beach, and like many beach communities in California, there's a lot of drugs. You know, I think when you combine affluence and kind of that California beach culture, that's what you get. And if you look at the drug use among young people in those communities, it's pretty high, and also high in the community. And so Redondo Beach said, let's just really get serious about this. And they adopted this really thorough, comprehensive drug and alcohol education for young people starting in seventh grade. And it really seems to have made an impact. I think drug use and alcohol use among young people there is less than half what it is in comparable communities, which I was really surprised by.
Yeah, we can often sometimes get a little cynical about health education, but that's actually showing results in actual data and numbers, been reducing, the number of people who would use.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I noticed is that districts that really take this seriously, they, well, like the previous guest was saying, they start young. They start in kindergarten. I mean, they're not talking about heroin to 5-year-olds, but they are talking about the importance of putting healthy things in your body. Don't take, basically don't take candy from strangers. Don't take things and put them in your mouth from people you don't know. Like it's okay for your mom to give you aspirin, but it's not okay for that stranger to give you aspirin, for example. The importance of critical thinking, decision making, setting goals, following through on goals, things like that. You can start with kids really young, and then later when they hit about fifth grade, start talking about tobacco use and vaping and so forth. I think we all remember in fifth grade when we had to see the picture of the damaged lung, from smoking. I think, and then when you get into, middle school, maybe talk more about alcohol. And then in high school, talk more about, cannabis and other, prescription drug abuse and so forth. So there's ways to weave it into science too.
I was in the era of DARE in elementary school, so in the 90s. Any other districts stand out to you? We touched upon Redondo Beach, but is it just isolated to beach communities, or are there other districts and schools in the state that are doing this right?
Well, a lot of districts are doing a really great job. It sounds like Sacramento's doing a really good job. I focused on Santa Maria down in rural, kind of eastern Santa Barbara County. They had some things in their community that they were concerned about, and they really doubled down on this. And they provide, counseling, to students, drug education, plus an outside organization that comes in. So if a child feels like they have a problem, or they're referred to the counseling office for having a problem with drugs and alcohol, then this outside agency is able to provide free counseling for that student and their families too. So it's, really comprehensive.
When it comes specifically to using, or even if you're unknowingly using fentanyl by, buying counterfeit or off-market prescription pills, when it comes to this specific issue of substance abuse, does this cross boundaries from higher income to lower income communities to urban and rural across the state?
Well, I think drug use in, certainly these days is crosses all boundaries. But in going through some of the data, I was really surprised to see that the more affluent communities in California had higher rates of drug use among young people, pretty significantly. And that's according to the California Healthy Kids Survey, which is a anonymous, confidential survey that the state gives out once a year to students in middle and high school. And I saw that, Marin County, some other affluent areas had rates close to 60% of young people saying that they were regular users of, alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs, whereas the state average is only 19%, and some districts were actually quite low. So that really stood out to me.
What do you think is driving this? I mean, I go back to what Victoria said with Sac City Unified, that, maybe a student thinks that they're buying Adderall, or another prescription pill, but that's actually laced with fentanyl.
Yeah, I think that that's part of it. I think that, accessibility, how, it is available on social media pretty easily. And for students who might have some extra money or extra time, or might not have a good understanding of the risks, or, there's a lot of peer pressure too, that all plays into it.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and we're speaking with EdSource senior reporter Carolyn Jones about the lack of health education courses taught in California's middle and high schools as the fentanyl overdose rates continue to rise. Let's talk about some of the personal stories that you profiled. They're incredibly important. There was a 15-year-old in Hollywood, and you shared their story. What do we know about their circumstances?
Well, in that particular case, it sounds like some students from a high school down in Hollywood bought something that they thought was Percocet outside of school, like at a park near school, and some of them took it. And this one you know, in this one tragic case, this girl died. Other students overdosed and were hospitalized and recovered. So there was a little outbreak there. I mean, it's not uncommon for, you know, students to experiment with pills of various kinds. And if they can't buy, you know, if they can't obtain it legally, they're going to get it illegally. And sometimes those pills are laced with fentanyl because fentanyl is cheap. It's cheap to put in these things. It gives a little extra bump, as they say. And it's easy to manufacture. So that's, you know, it's a huge risk. And that's why students have to just be extra careful.
Yeah, and experimenting has been around for decades. But what's different about fentanyl? Is it that even the smallest dose or even and just being off on a measurement by a little bit can be fatal?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Fentanyl is, I guess, 50 to 100 times more powerful than morphine. And if you don't know you're taking it, you know, I mean, it's just is absolutely deadly. I did interview a woman whose stepdaughter had died of a fentanyl overdose. And, you know, there's always the question. It's like, well, did these kids know what they were taking? Did they know they were taking fentanyl? And she says, you know, I don't know if my stepdaughter knew what she was taking or not. She definitely didn't think she was going to die. So I think right now, you know, with the stakes so high, the message I hear coming from schools is, no, it's not okay. None of this is okay. You know, you should never, ever, ever take a pill that you don't know what it is from a stranger under any circumstances.
When it comes to the level of education that students receive, you did speak with some students, a junior at Long Beach Polytechnic High School. What did they tell you about the health education that they receive?
Well, she said, you know, it's great that it's there, but it's just simply not enough. I mean, she was saying that she just knows lots of students who, you know, they smoke weed every day. They don't know how to stop. They don't, you know, it affects your mental health after a while. You sort of get caught in a rut. It can affect your relationships, definitely your academics. And she feels that it's the schools, there's just too many kids who aren't getting the message. You know, no matter how many counselors you hire or how many wellness centers you open, there's just too many kids who either maybe this kind of their drug use predates all this, or the message just isn't getting through somehow.
Yeah.
And she worries about that. She wants more.
When it comes to consequences, what type of punishment happens or takes place on campuses when someone is caught with an illegal substance or caught using an illegal substance?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's against the state law for a young person to be drinking on campus, smoking on campus, definitely doing drugs on campus. It's illegal anyway, but it's, you know, definitely illegal on campus. And so schools, it's a grounds for suspension usually. And then schools have a lot of latitude about how they implement that. You know, usually in the first offense, they'll send the child to counseling or to go talk to, you know, they'll send a note home to the parents or go talk to a counselor or something. The second or third offense, they might get suspended. I think last year there were something like 3,000 suspensions in California for drug use on campus.
Is that low or high?
That's about the same. I mean, suspensions overall are going down, and I think districts are starting to kind of change their approach a little bit and be a little bit less punitive and more supportive. Think, okay, this is a kid who needs help, maybe not punishment. So there is a trend that is going down, but it's hard to say if that means the actual drug use is going down. It's hard to say.
Yeah. When it comes to, you know, counterfeit pills that look like prescriptions, is that inherently more challenging for a teacher or a staff to know that it's an illegal substance? I mean, it's one thing if you see someone drinking alcohol on campus. It's another thing if you see them, you know, taking a pill.
Yeah, I think that's why they're changing the approach somewhat to kind of zero tolerance for, you know, especially for pills. You know, the message is, this is bad. Don't ever take it.
Is there any kind of accurate, because it's really difficult to know, you know, how often or how many students are involved in this. How do districts actually learn or gauge how many of their student body are using drugs and alcohol? I mean, is there something that happens that's anonymous? And is that information reliable?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, once a year, the California Department of Education sends out a survey to, I think it's 7th, 9th, and 11th graders. It's called the Healthy Kids Survey, and it's all manner of questions, kind of measuring overall student health. And there's many questions in there about drug use, alcohol use, tobacco use, and you can really break it down by 7th grade, you know, by age, by individual school even. And it's thought to be pretty reliable because it's anonymous and it's confidential. So schools do sort of use that information to say, okay, do we have a problem? And what is that problem?
Given that the health education that is offered, which is optional, isn't even throughout California, from everything that you gathered from all the conversations that you had, what do you think it will take to have something that is more evened out as opposed like a district by district basis? Are there any concrete suggestions that you take away from your reporting?
Well, I mean, the tide definitely seems to have turned with fentanyl. I do hear from a lot of parents who say, enough is enough. Schools need to do more. And they're just demanding more and better health education. And districts are listening to that. And school boards are certainly listening to that. And I think as we start seeing more reports about, young people being hospitalized or dying even, I think that that raises the alarm levels. It's kind of a change of mindset a little bit. I mean, I think that, California, we've legalized cannabis and, there's kind of two conversations happening. We're trying to be more, a little bit more tolerant of drug use, but at the same time, there's this dire threat too, especially particularly for young people. So, it's just a question of sort of fine-tuning the messaging a little bit and conversations like this and, other, public, discourse on this, I think will really make a huge difference.
Given that your focus is like your wheelhouse is education reporting, are you surprised that the number of fentanyl-related drug overdoses just continues to go up and up and up each year across the state, and of course, increasingly affecting our youngest residents?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I mean, you look at the numbers and they're just shocking. Really shocking. I mean, just to see this curve, it goes a flat, 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 and then chung, just shoots right up as soon as fentanyl arrives. I think during COVID, drug use among young people went down a little bit, probably because kids were home with their parents more often and had less opportunity. And so it was really nice to see that decline, and then to see this, the rise of fatalities just shoot up is very alarming and disconcerting.
Yeah. Finally, I go back to the mother that you talked to who lost her stepdaughter, and I go back to a conversation I had about fentanyl with a parent who lost their 22-year-old son last year. Both of them, or they didn't really understand what fentanyl was or this issue until the worst possible thing happened to their family. What do you want listeners to take away from this issue and this conversation?
I think that we really need to talk to our kids about drug use and really be really, really clear. Like it's there's it's not okay ever to take what you perceive to be a Percocet. The stakes are too high. It's not the same as, oh, breaking into mom's liquor cabinet. It's a completely different thing. And the stakes are just far, far, far too high. And we really, really need to change the way we start thinking about this.
Carolyn, thank you for joining us and sharing your reporting.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Carolyn Jones is a senior reporter for EdSource. You can read Carolyn's reporting on our Insight page at capradio.org. Still ahead, we'll meet Stockton Soul to hear about how they're bringing back Soul Orchestra and learn about their melody of entertainment and education called Edutainment for the next generation. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.